This is the Marketing Development Podcast, brought to you by the Marketing Development Academy, the online community designed to help you develop your marketing business, skills, and career by exploring the world of marketing and entrepreneurship. Here is your host, Pete Everett.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. I am Pete Everett, and today I'm joined by two guests who I will introduce individually to begin with. So, John Ozimek, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you, Pete.
It's great to have you with us. John, well, you work for a PR company, and we're going to get into all of that in a few moments, but do you want to give the boys and girls at home a little bit of background as to who you are?
Oh, gosh, no pressure at all. So I've been working in and around the tech industry for about 20 years now. And that's been specializing mostly in PR, but also some marketing roles. I've worked with some very big companies, IBM, Microsoft, Vodafone, things like that. But for the past sort of 10 years, I've specialized in working with startups and early stage companies. Mm-hmm. So these are typically businesses who are raising or have raised money and are looking to bring products and services to the market.
Great. And we're also joined by James Kay. So James, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'll stall out, so John and I are business partners. I mean, John and I founded Big Ideas Machine, which is our current agency, just over 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're a B2B tech PR agency. But really, in from my perspective, as far as what I've been doing, a lot of my career has actually been in the marketing side of things rather on the PR side of things. But as we'll discuss with you in a minute, the two are drawing closer and closer to each other. I've spent a lot of time in games and technology. I've worked for telcos, I've worked for British Telecom, BT, Orange. I was at the Daily Mirror a bit working on their apps. Mm-hmm. So I've also, like John, got quite a broad background in sort of technology, telecommunications, funnily enough, games. And that's coming much more into what we do at B2B. And like I said, we're kind of bringing together this approach of marketing and PR and what we do for our clients. But that's me.
You know, on a complete side note, when Orange became a network, one of their largest call centers was in Darlington in County Durham, which is where I grew up. And a number of my friends went and got jobs there. And ever since it's moved to EE, we all still refer to it as Orange. It's just always been Orange.
Well, the weird thing is, they never officially had a date where they just said, Orange, we're now EE. They did a very slow transition and never formally. And from a branding perspective, also, it was really interesting. And I won't segue down that particular rabbit hole. but your point, that's why you still do that to a degree, because they never just sort of flipped the switch one day. It was over a very gradual period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've just, if you're listening outside the UK and you've not understood the last 35 seconds of this podcast, don't worry about it. It's all to do with cell providers. If you didn't understand it, you'll be calling it a cell phone, I'm guessing. So guys, where did the Big Ideas Machine come from? What was the premise behind it, and why did you set it up?
To sort of compact the story as much as possible, James and I got in touch with each other about 10 years ago when we were both running our own consultancies. We both, funnily enough, come out of the very beginnings of the mobile app industry, and we were both doing various kinds of consulting and advising around that, where lots of companies were sort of suddenly realizing that they needed to make these things called apps because everyone was walking around with iPhones.
Yeah.
And so we started working together. We started collaborating because, as James says, he's got a very solid background in marketing, and I'd come out of a few roles in PR. After doing that, we decided to form an agency in London, work with B2B companies, B2B tech companies that were looking to get involved into the mobile tech industry. And that's basically evolved whereby we did the classic thing where we made loads and loads and loads of mistakes, learnt lots, and took the decision in 2014 to turn over a new leaf and start a new agency with new premises, new people, and a new outlook. So that's where we came up with Big Ideas Machine. Apart from the fact that it was one of those ones where you find a name that you can have the .com for, it's the reason James and I kind of started the business together is that we found that we shared a lot of ideas about how things should be done. So the PR industry kind of hasn't really changed much, and it's quite a closed industry, and I think we'll probably end up talking you know, a bit more about that, and I'd like to think that you know, if you've got listeners who are not familiar with PR, that's one of the problems. It's not a very open sharing information and sharing insight industry. And we felt that creativity was really important in the approach of what we do. James has got a phrase he loves trotting out. I don't know if it's his or whether he's stolen it.
No, it's mine. It's mine. It's mine. for the record, I'm saying it is mine.
You've heard it on a podcast now. It's official. So what is it? We're on tenterhooks.
Well, I always say to people, B2B doesn't have to mean boring to boring. So I've always found it very strange that when you're engaging with people on a B2B level, these are the same people that big brands, you know, I'm trotting out the cliches here, McDonald's, Nike, Coca-Cola, whoever it is, Red Bull, they are spending millions coming up to engage these people to make them want to buy from them. But for whatever perverse reason, they think that when these people step into an office, they turn into dry academics, and that they're only interested in receiving materials or white papers written at a very, very dry academic, unengaging level. So I think it's part of our vision is to bring a consumer mindset in terms of visual appeal and just even tone of voice to B2B, because it's so sadly missing, and that disconnect, I've never understood it.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, you know, we all look around every day and we see really creative, really fun advertising on TV, on billboards, you know, on cereal packets, wherever. I mean, the creative industry is an absolute linchpin of the economy. And yet when it comes to B2B, everyone thinks it has to be like very worthy and very dry and stuff. And it doesn't have to be at all. And so that's something that's really central to what we try and do.
Brilliant. So I think that has made a lot of sense. And as somebody that works with B2B businesses, you do sort of get this sense that when a B2B business potentially starts talking about marketing or PR or those kind of themes, that they do get very stiff upper lip British about it. You know, I'll write a letter about this, rather than sort of rolling their sleeves up and mucking on with it like they would in different, potentially with different processes. So you've sort of mentioned already that the PR industry is relatively closed, and that does very much come across to somebody that's from the outside looking in. And because of that, I think there's potentially a disconnect or a hindrance to people necessarily embracing, you know, what PR can do for them. So do you want to explore a bit more about that and how, yeah, you know, how a PR strategy is a good thing, you know, let alone just doing a piece of PR? What about a strategy in this? How does that work?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, fundamentally, the starting point for PR is understanding what it is and what it can achieve and what it can't achieve. And one of the best expressions I've heard for what PR is PR is basically about making somebody think or feel something. So it's about building a perception. And very often that perception is based around trust or features or quality or something like that. And then the art of marketing is to drive a demand for that thing that you, that you're positioning. So, you know, for example, let's take an something that everybody knows in the tech industry. Let's take Apple.
Yep.
Okay. So the PR component of what Apple does is Apple is making people think good things about Apple. You know, when there's something doesn't work, or there's a crisis, or you know, they make a financial announcement, then Apple goes to great lengths to manage that PR, to put out the positive messages, to explain people, you know, the context of what they're doing. And then on the back of that, Apple has, you know, some of the best marketing you'll ever see, driven massively through its creative agency that it's been with many years. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's all about building that brand through the combination of the two things. So for lots of smaller companies who are unfamiliar with PR, we find that when we have conversations with business owners, one of the first hurdles is helping them to understand what PR is able to do. And this links to what we'll probably talk about more is this idea of inbound PR, because nowadays people are looking for PR to help them have an effect on the bottom line, and that's where PR and marketing need to work much more together. Now in the PR agency world, that there's always been a division between doing PR and doing marketing, and the two don't overlap because they are different disciplines. They require different tool sets, different skill sets. And from a company's perspective, very often a different budget. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you are a PR agency is always going to fight for its share of the marketing budget. And that's one of the reasons it's quite a closed shop, because if we all knew, you know, what the hourly rate or what the average cost of a PR agency is every month, everyone would be able to compare and contrast and choose, just like we do that with, you know, utilities or other services. And maybe it's slightly opinion driven by me, but I felt that that the PR industry is very, very bad at doing that. You know, I've been in it for 20 years. I could not tell you what the UK average cost of a PR agency is, partly because it depends on variables. You know, what do you want them to do, how prestigious the agency you want to use is, but there is no kind of baseline for comparison. You literally have to go and do a bit of blind shopping if you want to engage a PR agency. And then in terms of building a strategy, really it's a collaborative process. It needs to be a collaborative process. You know, we spend a lot of time sitting down with CEOs and CMOs and saying, you know, what is it you think you want? And what is it do you really want? And so they'll often come to us and say, well, you know, we want people to know who we are. And you go, okay, that's absolutely brilliant. Fantastic. That's what we do. But why do you want that? And when you start examining the why, you find ultimately that they're looking to drive sales.
Yep.
And in a digital landscape now, people are expecting PR to align with other ways of doing marketing where you can clearly see an effect. You know, Google search rankings, traffic to websites, engagement, click-throughs, everything like that. And these are all a language which the PR industry at the moment is having difficulty transitioning to.
That's a really interesting point, Nat, because for those of us that work in marketing, be us marketing consultants, professionals working in larger companies, a lot of people servicing B2B clients, either as consultants or as employees. Those are sort of statistics that we look at every day. Yet the engine that is running, you know, that as you said, it's been in our you know, a stalwart of our economy for years, the PR industry. They're still playing catch up with those kind of metrics.
Yes, and I can't lay the blame at any one person, but it's a mindset change, and that's a difficulty. I think in marketing, there's been a necessity to change that mindset because it's very competitive. You know, you are fighting other brands for shelf space or, you know, purchasing budget. Whereas PR's never quite got that same directness And so it's, I think in a way, it's not been forced to change as quickly as other aspects.
James, you were going to come in on that?
Well, no, just to say, I suppose that from coming from two perspectives on my part is like I've come large in my career from the client side. I've managed PR agencies, I've managed agencies, and not coming from a wholly PR background, I understand the frustration that PR agencies somehow, that we use the word fluffy a lot. I think everyone uses it with PR and unaccountable. And I think we feel quite passionately through our approach and the techniques we're adopting that we can mitigate quite a high degree of fluffiness from the equation in order to try and engender a greater sense of faith and trust from our clients and the industry. B2B I'm talking about here specifically, because with consumer it may be there's different ways, but certainly that's what we've been trying to do in our approach.
That's brilliant. So again, I'm trying to ask these questions and not seem like I'm naive, but I am an outsider to the PR industry.
Yeah.
So one of the phrases that you've just mentioned is inbound PR. Now, the perception, again, the outsider's perception of PR is that it is very much an outbound form of communication. It's almost like a sort of set and forget type process. And you're now sort of spinning that round to have inbound connotations. So, you know, do you want to unpack that sort of mentality a little bit for us as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good question. PR has changed fundamentally. I mean, I'm just talking B2B. The old world of B2B is shouting and firing press release off at people and just telling people how great you are and talking about yourself and just shooting stuff out and largely to the media. And as we've now entered an era of social media, primarily LinkedIn with B2B, obviously everything's digital now, and the ability to track things as well as on an emotional level, it has transitioned to trust. Yeah. Everything we tell clients is you no longer talk about you. You do not self-reference. You do not tell people how great you are. You listen to your prospects. You identify their problems. You present solutions in the form of advice and incredibly useful advice and help. Once again, still not telling them about you or how great you are, mm-hmm. and earning that trust so that they will come to you eventually or they engage with you. So what we're doing in terms of how B2B should operate, we believe, and how it operates is this idea of engendering trust over a long period of time by giving things of value to your prospects and your clients. The best proponent of this, the person who I think is the doctrine revolutionary of this approach, is a woman called Ginny Dietrich. Yeah, Ginny is, she's got her own PR agency in the US. She's developed something called the PESO model, P-E-S-O, yeah? Mm-hmm. And you can look it up online, and she's written a phenomenal book called Spin Sucks. It's very well. And we're going to be interviewing her for a podcast for ourselves, funny enough. But if anyone who really wants to do B2B PR properly is interested, I would be going out there as a first port of call and reading Spin Sucks by Ginny Dietrich and just looking at the PESO model. Because what she's doing is spin sucks, you know, it's a very American term. It's taking PR, you're spinning the truth, you're creating a falsehood out of something. That approach sucks, it's no good anymore, and it doesn't engender trust. And that's effectively where we kind of what inspired us, I suppose, and where we're coming to.
So there's a number of things I could ask you about with that, but just to pick up on a couple of points, maybe first off, there's a lot of the trust building factors you've talked about there essentially sit very much in line with what we might term as content marketing. So do you think that PR is maybe moving away a little bit from the oh well, we'll send press releases out to The Guardian or The Independent or to whoever we want, and we'll take on more of a content marketing type approach?
It isn't. It has. It has. Any right, if you go and survey, most B2B PR agencies, a very high proportion of them now, will their time will be probably more developing content and finding channels to distribute this content to drive that inbound than putting out press releases. So as an example, we might work with the client and say, we're going to create an amazing piece of content for you based on a unique survey you're commissioning or your own data or insight from a platform. We create the insight or the data. At that point, it may be suitable to put out as a press release or approach journalist saying, "This our client finding many other channels to distribute the content through, or turn that content into different formats, podcasts, webinars, ebooks, slideshare presentations, an 800 word byline that you could pitch into the journalist as well as the press release." Mm-hmm. Those are all the things. So going back to your point about content creation, I think content creation must be at the heart of what a mon B2B PR agency does, because just subsisting based on every month sending out a press release or trying to place an 800 word byline with what is now a very restricted, dwindling pool of target media for the average B2B company that's operating in a specific vertical, that those agencies will come unstuck if they're not creating content adding value like that, and will probably get given the boot within 3 to 6 months, because we've had it ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, just to add to that, Pete, I mean, you know, for your listeners, just step back and put this into context. Mm-hmm. It used to be that you had a lot of vertical trade media whose job would be to write on a weekly or monthly basis about new products, new services, a few interviews, a few features about trends or whatever, and it would be mixed in with quite a high degree of product advertising. So what's happened with the shift on to online, but also the massive disruption created by Facebook and Google and Google advertising in particular, is that those ad revenues have gone. So you've seen a massive decrease, as James has said, in the available publications. The point of PR and marketing is to try and reach your customers and your prospects in the places where they are likely to be. So what that means is that publications, in order to try and keep their revenues, are looking for stories which are going to engage readers. And that's very often going to be quite big generic stories. It's not going to be a very specific niche tech product, unless it's highly relevant to that audience. So this has led companies to go and reach out directly to their customers. And that's driven an awful lot of the rise of content marketing. So the way you have to approach those things to bring them together is to have that in mind. So when we're looking at content marketing, when we're looking at PR, when we're looking at anything else we do, we follow the same, our structure, our strategies to follow, you know, very familiar ones to a marketer, which is who are the personas of your customers? What's their behavior? Where do they go? As James says, what problems of theirs can we solve? And we build content around that. And the reason we're calling it inbound is because the effectiveness of that content can be measured. If we create a report, a survey, an ebook, something educational, something that sits as evergreen content on a website or can be used as a sales team, as a mail out or something like that, and we also do some PR work around that, and by PR work I'm going to say a press release, an interview, a byline, something where you're placing content into a media publication and you're not paying for it. That's kind of what PR is. Then what you're doing is you're still helping to drive that traffic. But we start then to look at metrics like, you know, page rankings, SEO effect, whatever. But we can still look at, we can identify the effect that activity has on people visiting a page and then hopefully installs, downloads, conversions to sales. And that in a nutshell is what we're trying to do by calling it inbound.
You know, I nearly mentioned this earlier, but the conversation kind of moved on in that so a lot of my background has been in SEO, and SEO went through a serious period of sort of some dodgy footings where, you know, a lot of it was simply powered by buying links, cheap, low value links at high volume, and sort of an opinion from the clients that they didn't really know what they were paying for. And, you know, you'd have a meeting with your SEO once a month, and they'd tell you all of the stuff that they'd done and wow you with a presentation, then you wouldn't hear from them again until they were arranging next month's meeting and all of that kind of stuff. Do you think the SEO industry has had to work really hard to sort of pick itself up out of that? Do you think the PR industry's essentially going through a similar transition?
I think SEO is at the heart of, once again, I don't want to sound arrogant here, but a right-minded, progressive B2B PR agency must embrace SEO and have a fundamental understanding of it. Mm-hmm. So from my perspective, I'm quite a big SEO nerd. So, you know, I love Brian Dean, Backlinko. I don't know if you're familiar with Brian Dean.
Yep.
I've done his course. He's just an absolute guru in terms of link building and just understanding. Obviously, Neil Patel, all these people, I read up on the latest SEO, but when we are now engaging with a client, we use SERPstat. You know, I use MRush, SEMrush as well, SEMrush as well, mm-hmm. but that's our current tool, but we literally do an SEO audit for clients. What are you ranking for now? What are your clients ranking for? What keywords do you want to rank for? What's the content strategy going to be so we can help you rank for those keywords? So an absolute fundamental part of content creation and inbound marketing must be SEO. Content for the sake of content, or without understanding the underlying desire to not only drive inbound links, but organic inbound traffic, which is possibly one of the most valuable sources of trusted incoming traffic you can get, is absolutely paramount. And so with SEO agencies, I will not claim we're an SEO agency, but certainly SEO agencies, I know because I've spoken to them, they've rung me up, they're having to work with PR agencies because there's an overlap here and a gray area, because either they're working with the client to optimize the on-page factors of the site, which we also do with clients if they've got an SEO agency. And then we're also working all the off-page stuff as well. But yes, SEO is something that I think any agency must get very, very savvy with, and even work with SEO agencies on the roster to try and come up with, to try and dovetail the strategies in with each other.
Yeah. I mean, I think the... Again, I'm a few years out now since we started Big Ideas Machine, where I've been in other PR agency environments, but definitely, I've worked at some very, very large international agencies, and the financial model they have is that you have, you know, you're billing a client based on a budget, and you have an hourly rate, okay? And depending on the specialty or the seniority of the staff who are doing the work, your hourly rate might be, you know, £100 an hour or £300 an hour if you have a senior director doing some strategic work. Mm. Now, what I saw happen when social media sort of exploded, and the PR industry thought, oh, we'll have some of that. You know, we're the content creators, we're the opinion formers, we'll take on social media, was that they took that billing model and applied it to people writing tweets. And you don't need to pay £300 for somebody to write a tweet. So what happened was, you know, everyone went, no, that doesn't work for us. And the PR industry kind of went, oh, okay, what do we do about that? And what's happened is, you know, it's evolved so that actually a lot of agencies, a lot of individuals at agencies will use Twitter as a way of keeping in touch with journalists, and it works really well. So things evolve. It's become a tool, but it hasn't really become a revenue earner. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that this is a challenge ahead with content, because, you know, PR agencies are saying, okay, well, you know, We know your company. We know the press. We know what they're interested in. We'll create the content. But when you've taken that content out of that context and you're using it as a sales driving tool and you're sending it out directly, why would a company want to pay triple the cost of having somebody in-house do that or outsource it? You know, we're in an industry now where lots of people can use freelancers. It doesn't matter where they're based. They can be based anywhere in the world. You know, you don't have to have people in an office anymore. So those are the challenges. There's a very, I think, very good thinker on these kinds of things, a guy called Steve Waddington, who was very senior at a big, large international agency called Ketchum. And he has his own blog, and he's been calling for many years for PR agencies to have, their own tech stack, by which he means processes and software that allows them to have this kind of level of insight, you know. But I think fundamentally, if somebody's going into a career in PR, they may be still not understanding the other skills that need to be in their toolkit. And fundamentally, that's going to be things like understanding SEO, understanding marketing automation, and understanding data, Google Analytics, traffic, things like that. Because they are, if they're not, they're important now, but they will be fundamental going forward.
That makes, I think you've summed it up. The sort of summary that you've just both given, I think, has summed it up completely. And from an SEO point of view, one of the things that Google has enforced upon anybody that's considering SEO is to do with the genuine trust factor of the backlinks that you're creating. And of everything that's changed over SEO in the past sort of 5, 6, I don't know, 10 years even, the method of acquiring backlinks is probably the thing that's changed the most, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Yeah, and that's... Sorry, go on.
No, you go for it.
and that's why it's precisely why I mentioned Brian Dean, because I think the value of PR, the immediately easy thing to do to earn a backlink, because look, I get emails all the time for our site, people offering to do guest blogs, and I see it's like a templated approach. It's clearly that all they're doing is trawling, finding keywords and trying to get me to link back to them or to replace a product I've linked to with their product. But PR, that's where PR comes back into the SEO value. Absolutely, is what you've just said, is it's a really great way of getting a site with a high DA, a high domain authority, and linking back to the client. Now, obviously, it isn't always the case in PR, and this is something else companies need to be aware of. Clients often say, why is a link to us not in the text? Why isn't there a link in there? But often just the mere mention of you is enough for Google to understand you're featured on that site and to come back to you. But if you've got content or a survey, you can often get that backlink, because if someone gives a synopsis and writes about you on VentureBeat, for example, where we've got coverage for clients before, they'll often give the link, say, to check out the full survey, click here. And so it's a natural way of earning that backlink within the copy of a high domain authority website. But definitely that's where PR can play a part in earning backlinks in a more legitimate and easier way for clients and for SEO benefit.
And also, actually, Pete, just interesting to add to that, we see now with some of the very high profile editorial websites. A good example is Forbes. If you can get your company mentioned on written about on Forbes, it's got such a huge global readership, then the implications are the traffic can be great. The domain authority is absolutely huge. They offer an array of sponsored content, which is another area, that I think is affecting PR, but it's kind of another subject. But if you place sponsored content with them, it doesn't get scraped by Google, so it doesn't come up in any SEO effect at all. So what you get is you can share it on LinkedIn. You go, oh great, my CEO's got this opinion piece in Forbes. But what you don't get is any of that traffic boost. So definitely see some of these publications understanding the value of backlinks and saying, well, no, you know, we're not giving you that power for free. There's a financial transaction to be had.
I think you know you've hit upon a real sort of nugget there, which is we talk about with our clients so often to do essentially with vanity metrics. You know, great, you're in Forbes, you're on the Huffington Post, you're on New York Times, whatever it might be, but really, is it actually going to do you any good other than a bit of ego massaging, I suppose?
Again, I mean, it's the hardest thing in PR, you know, and that's for all James and I can sit down and we can bang on about metrics and, you know, relevance and data and everything like that. The hardest thing in PR is I cannot guarantee a result. I can try my best. I can say I've got all of this experience and James has got this insight and we've got a fantastic team and we're creative and everything. I cannot force a journalist to write something. If you want a guaranteed result, then you want to go and do advertising.
Yeah,
you know, but it is a different beast. You know, and you go back to, you know, the famous quotes about, you know, Bill Gates saying, if I had a last dollar, I'd spend it on PR, you know, because it is about that reputation, it is about that perception, and it can be a very subtle thing, and it can be all about the context of what you're doing. But what's happened nowadays is PR used to be in a little silo, but it's not. It's a part of a much larger thing. And actually, I think PR is being subsumed into other specialties. And so the PR industry needs to try and move with the times so that it can still protect its distinct value, which I completely believe in. You know, we still call ourselves first and foremost a PR agency, yet here we are talking to you mostly about digital marketing.
and there we go. We almost come full circle back around to where we started. It's great when episodes work out like that. So really, I've only got sort of two things left to sort of talk to you about, and in terms of this episode. So the first is, you know, if I am a marketing consultant, let's keep this within the realms of B2B, because I know that is where you operate. But I am a marketing consultant, or I work for a B2B firm. I am in their marketing department. Where do I start with, you know, exploring the benefits of what PR in inverted commas can do for me if I'm not doing it already?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the first thing is there's a general lack of enlightenment as to what PR actually can do for them. Mm-hmm. So most conversations that we have are actually based around moving people away from them thinking PR is about media relations, controlling the public perception of you. That may manifest itself through the media, but it's not exclusively through the media. So if somebody's exploring B2B PR, I think they need to, you know, if they were coming to us, the first thing we'd be doing is trying to understand their objectives, obviously, but they're not in a very preachy, didactic, patronizing way. We are trying very hard to make people shift people's mindset from engaging with us to look at media, and measuring our performance every month on the media coverage we've earned, and much more towards this inbound approach that we've spoken about measuring it, about the long-term value of creating content, which can still be driving people to their site 2 years down the line, about capturing leads, and about being able to monitor the value of those leads that have come through content and PR 1.5-2 years down the line. And, you know, we haven't spoken about it yet today, if I may segue it in, but the final piece of what we do for people and we've been adopting is marketing automation. So we've got when we talk to people, it's quite overwhelming, I suppose, because when you start throwing around SEO, content marketing, media relations, and content automation into the mix, it builds it can be an overwhelming pitch for somebody who's innocently rung up to find out whether we can place them in Forbes or Business Insider on a monthly basis. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question in terms of where they start. Certainly what we're trying to do in terms of our own, you know, our own creed is we are producing a series of guides that are trying to cover key aspects of B2B PR around areas like content distribution, measurement, and actually just what the hell is modern B2B PR. So certainly when people come to, I can only speak from our perspective, when people come to us, we've got these materials that we're giving them because effectively we're trying to prove to them that which we want them to prove to others, which is helping them and giving them materials and insight that hopefully engenders trust in us that we can do a good job for them.
Yeah, I think just to add to that, I think it is difficult because people have got very, you know, well-formed opinions of what PR is, rightly or wrongly. And one of the things that needs to be happening is actually rather than going to an agency and saying, look, this is my shopping list, this is what I want from you, which will very often engender a response of like, well, that's fine, this is what we're going to charge you, but there's not going to be a deeper examination of actually whether this really is what you want. I think really anyone that's looking to embark on PR should speak to a couple of agencies and just say, look, I want to have a conversation. Is this the right thing for me? This is actually really what I'm looking to do. As James says, you know, not many people really use the media now for a purchasing decision. Yes, it will be part of that. It will be part of forming an opinion. But, you know, what's the first thing you do now if you read a story saying, oh, you know, go and buy these latest Nike trainers? You're going to Google it. You're going to go online. You're going to look at reviews. You're going to look it up for yourself. And you're going to gather together all of this other contextual information. And then you will make an opinion. And a B2B purchasing cycle is no different. You're going to go and Google the company, and then you're going to go and Google all the rivals, and then you're going to go and see if somebody said something nasty about them, you know, and it's like, you can't pretend that doesn't happen. You have to think about all that. So, you know, it might not be that you want to be in a publication. It might be that you want to have some really fantastic content on your website that explains all the features of your product really, really well. You know, but I think the first thing you have to do is put aside preconceptions about what PR is and where the line between PR and marketing is, and just say, look, this is my business challenge. How do you think you can help me solve it? And then I think people will get a much better answer that I would hope shifts this whole thing away from being PR is about, you know, taking journalists out for lunch and having a secret black book of contacts. And turns it into something where actually PR professionals can show their value a bit more.
That's a great summary, I think, that you've just put there. And I think rather than delving into the themes of marketing automation when we're like 40 odd minutes into a show, I think if you guys would be open to it, maybe it'd be worth scheduling another recording in a few weeks' time to actually maybe specifically look at that. But just as you've been talking, I've been the light sort of switched on in my head that, you know what, PR doesn't necessarily just have to be top of the funnel. It can then permeate down a number of levels, maybe not quite to decision stage, but certainly through that information and learning stages of your funnel. So it would be great to have another conversation with you about that if you'd be open to it.
Perfect. No, I'd love that. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, you've now said that on the podcast, so it now has to happen. So if anybody listens to this, obviously you guys are sort of super knowledgeable, and it's been really informative the last few minutes. So how can people find you online or connect with you if they want to sort of engage with you in a discussion further?
Well, just, you know, our website is bigideasmachine.com, and LinkedIn, we've got a company page. I don't say the name again for fear of sounding too obvious. And Facebook, although we're not very good with our Facebook page, I will openly admit we have to be putting more content on there. But yeah, generally speaking, you know, through our website or even giving us a good old-fashioned phone call, we love that. James Bang Retro.
James and I are both on easy to find on LinkedIn, so, you know, more than happy for people to get in touch.
Yeah.
I must admit, as I looked you up on LinkedIn before this call, I realized there weren't many Ozimex on there. So that did make you slightly easier to find. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Pete. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you.